Hello, I'm Derek Arden, and thank you so much for joining the live chat show today with Tim Scher from Indianapolis. I first met Tim a few weeks ago when Tim asked me to appear on his podcast, which goes global all around the world, and he was introduced to me through our friend Patricia Fripp. Tim asked me to do a negotiation masterclass for him, which I did. We immediately struck up a rapport, which was fantastic. We had an hour's chat after that, and we had a long chat last night. So I've got some great questions for Tim. Tim's a hypnotist and a clinical hypnotherapist. I'm not quite sure what all that means, but absolutely delighted to have you with us, Tim, and thanks for joining us at midday in Indianapolis. Tim, so talk me through, what is hypnotism?
So hypnotism is a way of using your mind to create your life by design. It's a combination of using relaxation and understanding how your subconscious or unconscious mind functions. So your mind, your brain, in a very simple term, is like a computer. And the beliefs that you have are the computer software. And so your software determines what kind of life experience you have. And we, as the person who is able to influence the way that we think, we have the ability to influence our beliefs and what we say to ourselves and how we judge others and ourselves and situations that we experience. We are the computer programmer. So hypnosis is simply a way of learning how to use the power of your mind to create your life by design.
Now, Tim, I did say to you that one or two people in the UK, unlike America, could be a bit skeptical, a bit cynical about hypnosis, and even a bit scared, as I was when I did my first training. What would you say to them?
Well, when we're afraid of something, it's often because we don't understand it. And the more you understand how to use hypnosis as a tool, the more you fall in love with it, because it's just a word describing a way of helping people to feel safe, to feel loved, to feel more confident, to be more resourceful, to change bad habits, to increase more pleasure in your life and decrease pain. And, you know, I believe that we have this incredible mind and we should know how to use it more effectively. I had somebody one time say, "Well, I don't trust that stuff." And I said, "Well, do you use electricity?" And he said, "Well, yeah." I said, "Do you use an aspirin if you get a headache?" He says, "Well, sure." I said, "Do you know how electricity or how aspirin works?" And he said, "Well, no, not really." And I said, "But you can still trust it." And hypnosis is the same way. You can trust that it's just a set of tools and insights that allow you to understand how you're creating reality in your mind and how to influence that reality. So I've used hypnosis as a way of relaxing people and helping them figure out what's driving their unwanted behavior or how to help them achieve goals just by simply understanding what they really believe about themselves. And a lot of the beliefs that we have are stored in our unconscious mind. And they were put there, or we absorbed those beliefs when we were young, so we don't even remember it happening. And those beliefs that we developed when we were little, when we were young children, are still calling the shots in our adulthood. And so it's so important to understand how your mind works and how to access those beliefs. People will go to therapy or counseling or to a psychologist. And a lot of the therapies that they use take years for people to be able to access what the real beliefs are. And hypnosis can help you find those beliefs in 20 minutes. And so it's just a faster, more effective way of using the power of your mind to create your life in the way that you want it to be.
Fantastic. Now, some of us that have done NLP and hypnosis understand exactly what you mean, but I have a feeling there's some people on this Zoom call who won't know what you mean. Tell them the story about the fire chief who had a problem with water. Mind you, I can't believe you told me the fire chief had a problem with water, but yes. I thought they used a lot of that. But
Well, he had a problem going underwater, so he was afraid of swimming. And he said that he had a swimming pool in his backyard, but he could not sit down in it. He always had to stand up, and he was very afraid of going into any body of water. And he didn't like it, and he wasn't sure why. And so I went ahead and used some simple NLP techniques. If people aren't familiar with that, I won't go into it. But what we did was we went back to the event or the situation that created that fear, because he wasn't born afraid of water. And so he went back to a time when he was 7 years old, and he was in a public pool, and some older kids were bullying him, and they were holding him under the water. And so obviously that would scare anybody, that would traumatize people. But it's not the experiences that we go through, it's the beliefs that come from those experiences that influence us. Dr. Wayne Dyer, a famous author and psychologist, once said that if you get bit by a snake, the snake bite hurts, but it's not the snake bite that kills you. It's the venom that's left inside. And that venom, if it's left inside, paralyzes us. Well, we go through traumatic experiences, some that are really big and some that are small. It's not the experience itself. It's the belief that comes from it. The beliefs that we have that are negative, like I'm not good enough, I'm not safe, I'm not lovable, I don't deserve to be happy, I don't deserve to feel confident or have nice things. That's the venom that paralyzes us and holds us back from having improved health, happier relationships, more money and prosperity, the ability to achieve goals, etc. So we went back to that time when his name was Brett, when Brett was being held underwater and it scared him. And then he formed a belief that I'm not safe in water. So his brain developed a coping mechanism, a defense mechanism, so that if he was anywhere near water, his fight or flight response would be triggered. He would experience strong anxiety. And that was his brain's way of trying to get him out of that situation. So we went back to that situation, changed the memory, where instead of him remembering it through the eyes of a child, he came into that memory, rescuing himself as the big, strong guy that he became. And now he took the bullies and he was throwing them around in the water. We took back control. And then we changed it. I helped him to think of the water as, what would it look like if you were underwater and you could see the sky from under the water? It would be like what a fish might see or what a dolphin might see. And all of a sudden he started thinking of it from the viewpoint of a fish or a dolphin, which just changed his approach. Instead of viewing the situation as a scared little child, he was viewing it completely different, which changes the feeling. And then we created a new belief that I am not a kid anymore. I am strong and I am safe and I can feel peaceful in water. So while he's imagining water, he's also feeling safe and his brain makes a new connection. And then, and all this took about 5 minutes in the techniques that I was doing, like with, if you have any NLPers on here, I was just doing a quick fast phobia cure and then changing the submodalities, right? And so then I asked him afterwards, how are you feeling? And he said, I feel really good. He said, in fact, after this call, I'm going to go in the backyard and get in that water. And he did. We talked to him the next day and he said that he asked his wife to go with him and he went in the water and he said it was the first time he could float on the water. And his wife was shocked. She didn't understand what was happening. And then I said, did you go underwater and see what it was like? And he said, I did. He said, I kept thinking that I was like a fish and this is what fish must see when they're looking underwater. And he said, I felt very calm. And it was so surprising. Now, if he would have went to therapy, traditional therapy, where they'll use cognitive behavioral therapy and stuff like that, it might have taken him months to get there. You know, maybe years, if he even would have. And so the techniques that we have available to us today are extraordinary. And remember, it's not the hypnosis, it's not NLP that are magic. You are the magic. The magic is you. It's locked inside of you. It's just like having a safe. You got to have the right combination, and then the door will open, and you'll find the treasure.
Fantastic, Tim. I just want to pick you up on a couple of things for people who are on the call. There are some NLPers here, and there are some people that aren't. You said in NLP jargon, a fast phobia cure and changed the modalities. Well, it took me about 10 days to work out what they were when I went on my NLP course. So if anyone's wondering what's happening and that you're scrambling their brain, they should be. And if you understand that, you should. There's a couple of questions in the chat box. I think it would be a good questions to ask you now.
Real quick, you're not scrambling their brain. You're scrambling an old fear that's outdated.
Okay. I'm sorry about that. I was trying to think of a metaphor about scrambled eggs turning them into omelets, but someone must have planted that in my brain at some stage. Let's Norman Edwards would like to know, are you able to hypnotize somebody on Zoom? In an MBA course, we did self-hypnosis and how to use it.
Yeah, excellent question. Yes, in fact, since we've gone through this worldwide pandemic, all of my sessions have been through Zoom. However, I've been doing that for years because I have clients in Europe, and I had a coaching client in Dubai for a year. And so I've been doing coaching and Zoom sessions for a long time, and it works just as well. In fact, I tell people that when we do the hypnosis, you traditionally close your eyes and listen to the sound of my voice. That's all we need. So if we were sitting in the same room, you would close your eyes. You wouldn't see me anyway. So it works just as well. Sometimes people think that for hypnosis, you have to be in this quiet room in a recliner with music and no disruptions, but that's not the case. I mean, I've hypnotized people in public where it was very noisy. Or if you see a show where people are laughing and cheering and being crazy, that's not a quiet, relaxed place, and yet they're still responding in the way that you want them to. And so what happens is, because we don't understand it, we think that we have all these conditions that have to be met for it to work for us. Oh, I know it would work for you, but I'm different. Probably not. You know, there's about 8 billion people on the planet, and our nervous system, our brain, our physiology tends to work the same. So we might have a little bit different way that we view the world. However, anybody can be hypnotized. In fact, your television is the greatest hypnotist on the planet. Commercials are just hypnotic suggestions. You watch TV, you sit back, you get in a relaxed, focused state of mind. You're focusing on the television. They're using visuals and sounds and music and creating experiences that generate specific emotions inside of you. And then they give you a suggestion to go buy their product. And then we often buy their product. You know, if you look on the television commercials and then you look in your kitchen, you're going to see that that it works very well. And that's really hypnosis, you know, just very basic hypnosis. We just use it to help you achieve the goals that you desire most.
Fantastic. I think while we're on that subject, Gabby, who's on, actually worked with Paul McKenna. We talked about Paul McKenna last night, didn't we? The next question in the chat box is really, what happens on one of these hypnotic shows? And I know you used to do them and you stopped doing them. Can you talk us through the principles there? Oh, and the last question was, can you force people to do things they don't want to do?
No. No, you cannot force people to do things they don't want to do, right? You can manipulate people, but you don't need hypnosis for that. People use manipulation and guilt and anger and all kinds of stuff to manipulate. So that might be for a different conversation. But traditionally, with hypnosis, you can't make people do things they don't want to do. In an entertainment show, what you're doing is you're helping people to feel like a star. And most people that go to a hypnosis show know what to expect. They have a general idea of what's supposed to happen. So most of the people that volunteer to be on that stage want to be the star, right? They want to get the applause. They want to have the fun experience. That's why they volunteer. Almost every single show, including anyone that Paul McKenna might have done, is they ask for volunteers. Then they take them through a series of suggestibility tests to see who responds the fastest? Some people are very responsive and what you might call suggestible, and some people are not. Now, both kinds of people can be hypnotized, but some just go into it faster than others. Like if you're watching a television show and there's an emotional scene, and if it was my wife and I might be sitting there all of a sudden tearing up, right? Especially if it's like a sports movie or some kind of inspirational movie, and all of a sudden I'm like tearing up, right? And I'm getting all choked up about it. And my wife's looking at me and she's like, what's wrong with you? Right? And so I'm very suggestible. She's not as suggestible. So if we were going to do a show, she would be a little bit more guarded and I would be like, I'll do it. Okay. And so you're looking for the people who go into the hypnosis the fastest. And the second part of it is you're lowering inhibitions. Most people have a healthy amount of insecurity inside of them. And because of that, we're afraid that others might judge us. We don't want to look like we're out of control or inappropriate, or that we're going to embarrass ourselves or look like a fool. And so with hypnosis, you learn to lower those inhibitions. The only reason you would be afraid of other people judging you is if you are secretly in your own head judging yourself negatively. If you're judging yourself with love and kindness, you're just going to assume that everybody else is going to judge you that way as well. If you are judging yourself harshly, then you'll just kind of assume that other people are going to judge you that way as well. And so with hypnosis, what it does is it lowers inhibition so that you can get on stage and shine. So let me give you, can I tell you a quick story about that?
Yes, please.
So I was doing a show, this is when I was considerably younger, and I love that attention of being up there. And until I realized that it wasn't about me, it was about the people on stage. They were the real stars. And so I would ask for volunteers and I would do suggestibility tests just to see how well people responded. And then the people that did really well, I asked them to come on stage. The people that didn't do so well, I asked them, thanks for volunteering, but not this time around. And so there was, every once in a while, if you're working with an audience, you'll see that when you're doing the induction, when you're getting people to get relaxed, that every once in a while, somebody in the audience will get very relaxed and go into hypnosis as well. So I look out in the audience and I see a gentleman and he's waving at me and then pointing, and his wife is sitting down next to him with her head on the table. Okay. And she apparently got so relaxed that she just went into that state of hypnosis. And so I came down into the audience and I asked her, I said, would you like to go on stage with us? And she nodded her head yes, which I smiled, and her husband looked at me and his eyes were like saucers. He's like, what's happening? Okay. So she came on stage, and at the time, Ozzy Osbourne and Cheryl Osbourne had that TV show in America, and it was the Osbournes. And so they knew who Ozzy Osbourne was. So I turned on Crazy Train, and he has this music, and I told her that she was Ozzy Osbourne, and she started shuffling around the stage. Now, she wasn't saying anything, but she was kind of like doing like this, and she was just going, ah, blah, 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 like that. Now, the fascinating thing about that was that afterwards they stuck around, and I came over to them and I said, you were brilliant. You were so good. You know, you were wonderful tonight. You should feel very proud of yourself. You really were a star. And she says, I just can't believe that I did that. And her husband said, I don't know what happened. He says, my wife has social anxiety. She can't be in front of crowds at all. She didn't even want to come in here, but we saw the sign. We thought we'd maybe check it out. I can't believe that she was on stage doing that. So here's someone who had incredible social anxiety, which is an incredible fear of being judged by others. We were able to let that go, fill her with a sense of peace, let her know that she is already enough. She doesn't have to prove anything. And then just let her have some fun. And that's what a stage show really is all about. It's about when it's done correctly. Now, there are some hypnotists, you'll find them in Las Vegas, who are all about themselves, and they'll suggest things that aren't good for the people, and the people will do it anyway, not just because they're hypnotized, but because they feel the pressure to perform. We've all been in that situation where we maybe didn't want us to go along with something, but we did because we didn't want to let people down, or we, you know, didn't want to look like we were the only one that wasn't going along with it. And so some hypnotists will use that, but those aren't very ethical hypnotists. And their giveaway is because they often will say X-rated hypnosis, you know, so they're already setting up an expectation of what you think should happen if you go to a show like that. But I stopped doing shows, even though they're fun and innocent, because some people are amazed, but most people are scared by it. And that's why I decided that I stopped doing those shows, and I just really focused on doing the clinical stuff.
Fantastic. Let's move on now. With COVID, there's a huge amount of extra anxiety in the world, in America, etc., and everywhere. Can you just talk us through what would you do with somebody on Zoom that was anxious, and how you'd relax them and put them in a relaxed state and work on them?
So when somebody is feeling really anxious, when they have a lot of anxiety, that's almost always a good sign to know that they're very suggestible and they'd be great with hypnosis or NLP, right? Because they're already responding to a lot of the fear that's out there. And it, anxiety was on the rise before COVID-19. So much political angst, so much going in the world, so many changes happening that you have to create your own security, because it's hard to feel like anything is secure in this world. And so there was so much anxiety before. And now with the worldwide pandemic and the physical distancing and being afraid that you're going to be attacked by an invisible force at any moment has made all of us feel more anxious, but some more, you know, even worse than before. And so there's always a few things that I do. And the first thing is, when we start to help someone get relaxed, we always focus on your breathing. And I always just simply teach power breathing, where you breathe in through your nose, down to your belly, and you slowly exhale. Power breathing is so simple, because when you start breathing through your nose, down to your belly, and you slowly exhale, and you do that 5 times in a row, it starts to activate your relaxation response, your body's natural ability to feel more calm and peaceful. Most people, when they are feeling anxiety, they are breathing through their mouth. They're either holding their breath or they're breathing very short and shallow. And so mouth breathing activates the fight or flight response and does the exact opposite of what we want. So I start with the power breathing. Then I just start imagining soothing imagery. So I'll have them imagine sending sunshine over the top of their head and down through their shoulders, down to their fingers or their toes. You know, if we have enough time, if you're interested, I could take everybody through a 5-minute little experience. So you use some relaxation. And then what I do is I have them feel the anxiety, step into it, and follow it back to the vent or situation that's most responsible for the anxiety. Now, on the surface, you would think, well, it's because of COVID, or because it's because of something that's happening in the present. But I will tell you, 10 out of 10 times, it is not that. They go back to something that happened when they were young. They're feeling unsafe now, often because of the beliefs that were formed in their mind when they were young. Now you might say, well, Tim, it sounds like you're saying that everything has to do with the beliefs that you developed when you were young. That's exactly what I'm saying. Because those beliefs influence how we cope with life, how we communicate with ourselves, how we communicate with others, and how we talk to ourselves in the present moment. And so it's very important to develop beliefs that help you to feel like you're enough, that you're safe, that you're loved, that you're worthy, that you're capable. Because when you have those feelings and those beliefs inside, it'll help you to be more resourceful with how you deal with any uncertainty that shows up in your life. And that's how I approach it.
Tim, I'd like you to do a guided meditation, but perhaps could we do that another time? Sure. Because there's a lot of questions. Would you do that for us? That would be brilliant, with a couple of other things that I had in mind another time. So you call that a guided meditation. Now, we can do that to ourselves, can we? We can do what we call self-hypnosis. putting ourselves into what's it called, alpha state, I guess.
Yes, it's very simple and easy, whether you're using self-hypnosis or meditation or yoga or even going for a walk. Any of these activities, listening to quiet music, watching an inspirational movie, any of these activities, taking a hot bath, a favorite scented candle, any of these activities will release endorphins in your mind and help you feel a sense of ease. It's one of the reasons why people eat sugar or smoke cigarettes or drink alcohol. They're trying to get a little dopamine release. The problem is that there's side effects when you use those drugs. So if I teach people how to get high on hypnosis, right? So instead, you're just using the medicine that's already inside of you. There's an old phrase that says, when you learn to go within, you never go without. And so self-hypnosis is very simple. It's just knowing that you're going to relax a little bit. You're going to imagine what you want to have happen. And then that's it. If your mind wanders, that's okay. You know, because what happens is we overanalyze it. We'll think, well, it's supposed to happen this way, or my mind's supposed to be completely blank, which almost never happens. Our mind is always going, right? Or I'm going to analyze everything. Well, we analyze everything because we're secretly trying to make sure that we're safe. So with hypnosis, you might just close your eyes and imagine counting from 10 down to 1 as you relax each part of your body, working from head down to your toes or from your toes up to your head, whatever you want, whatever makes you more comfortable. You can listen to music or not listen to music. You can focus on your breathing through your nose, which I recommend, because breathing through your nose will help relax you. And when your body relaxes, your mind relaxes. So you just spend a couple of minutes imagining your body relaxing, and then you simply imagine whatever it is that you want to have happen. Imagine that it's already happened. Imagine that it's here now. See, one of the biggest reasons why people don't have what they want in life or they're not happy with where they are is because they're focused on what they don't want, what they don't like, and what's missing. And whatever you focus on expands. What you think about comes about. The famous author Earl Nightingale once said that the strangest secret is that whatever you think about most of the time, your life becomes. And so when I ask people, how can I help you? What do you want? They always tell me what they don't want, what they're trying to get away from, what they're unhappy about. When I ask what they want, what they do want, they don't know. Can I give you an example of that, Derek?
Yes, please.
So a woman came to see me one time and she said, I want to stop procrastinating. And I said, okay, good. What do you want then? She says, well, I want to stop putting things off. And I said, great. Well, what do you want to have happen from doing that? She says, well, then I won't be so unorganized. And I said, okay, well, then what can we do to, you know, when you're not unorganized anymore, what would happen then? And she said, well, I wouldn't be procrastinating. See, her mind was only hearing procrastinating, unorganized, putting things off. So that's all it could act upon, because that's what it heard. She was very clear on what she did not want, but she could not articulate what she did want. You can't hit a target if you don't know what that target is. Okay, so what I helped her to understand is what you want is to feel focused, motivated, structured, organized, and peaceful or confident. And she said, yeah, that's what I said. But that's not what she said. So we got to change our language. Words are powerful because the words you use push buttons in your brain and release different neurotransmitters and hormones that cause you to feel different emotions. So if you say procrastinate, you're going to push one button in your brain and feel a set of emotion, which is usually adrenaline or cortisol. If you say, you know, feeling more motivated, then often it will push a different set of buttons inside of you. So we've got to get clear on what we want. Once you start to articulate what it is that you actually want, what it looks like, how it would sound, how you would feel, how you would know that you have it now, what would be different. When you start talking about this, now your mind says, okay, I know what to go after now. And you'll start to feel more confident already just because you're clarifying what you want and why you really want it. Once you do that, then your mind will start giving you clues for how to make that happen.
Wow. Now, what I'm thinking here is, how do we stop people saying negatives? Because more than 50% of people in the UK I meet, probably 75%, do that. And I remember on my NLP training, it was don't think of a blue elephant. But, you know, I hear people going away, talking to their kids, don't worry about that. Don't catch a cold at Christmas. How do we get that through to people? Because I've tried, not very successfully, I have to say, because they look at me like I'm stone cold bonkers. And that means crazy in the UK, if that doesn't translate across the pond.
Oh, it translates. Oh. Yes, it does. So it depends on the situation. So if you're standing next to somebody on the street and you notice somebody says that, a father says that to their child, and you try to give advice on that, they're probably going to blow you off. But if they're in a situation where they are hiring you to coach them, then you could give examples, not of them being wrong, but what you do is you tell stories where they can see themselves in the story, but not feel like you're telling them that they're wrong or they're doing something wrong, because then people feel like they're not being validated, or they feel bad, guilty, shameful. And then instead of listening for the advice or feedback, we become defensive. And that's the resistance that you're talking about.
Yeah.
So instead of directly going, don't say that, right? What we would want to say is, can I give you an example? Can I share a story with you? Or there was something that I experienced one time I want to share with you. Is it okay? And you tell them a story about yourself. I will tell stories about myself where, you know, I was I have two boys, and when they were little, I used to tell one of my sons, don't throw that toy. Now, I don't know about you, but if you tell a kid, don't throw that toy, you know what they do? They throw the toy, because the brain apparently doesn't understand the word don't. It only hears what comes after it, right? So what the brain hears is throw the toy. So, you know, there's someone that came to see me one time, and he said, I can't stop eating cookies. I don't know what's wrong with me. I just can't stop eating cookies. I tell myself all day long, just don't eat the cookies. Just don't eat the cookies. Just don't eat the cookies. And I said, well, what your brain is hearing is eat the cookies, eat the cookies. And so it is, right? So what do you want your brain to do instead? What do you want your brain to do? Well, I don't want it to eat the cookies, right? What do you want it to do then? What do you want it? Do you want it to grab a glass of water? And this is the second part of it, Derek. You have to give them ideas for what to do, because often they don't actually know where to go to. They only know where they've been. So you've got to give them the new words, the new language, the new ideas. You know, maybe you say, I want to grab a glass of water. Maybe I want to go take a walk around the house. Maybe I want to ask myself, what is it that I'm really needing right now? You know, what would that cookie do? Does it comfort me? Am I looking for some variety? Am I bored? I want some, you know, something that's going to feel like it's a treat for me. What am I really looking for? And then how can I satisfy that feeling in a new way that's not going to give me diabetes?
Wow.
Right? Wow. So first you have to offer the advice in a way where it feels loving and supportive and non-judgmental. Then you can do that through telling stories or giving examples. Then you got to teach them you got to give them the new skills and the new words and the new examples that they can use. And then often they start to recognize it, and then they're like, oh, wow, I never thought of that before. And then usually you see them a week later and they're like, I can't believe how many times I had to catch myself constantly. I didn't realize how much I was doing that. And what that means is that they've become more self-aware now, which is really good.
So it's okay to tell your own stories, because I remember when I studied NLP, Richard Bandler always talked about his friend John. Now, his friend John didn't exist, did he? But it wasn't a story, this happened to me, this happened to my friend John. That's okay, is it? Does that work?
Yes, it depends on the situation. So Bandler will tell you have to have behavioral flexibility, which means you got to be able to give the person in front of you what they need. So that means that you might have to show up one way telling a story about yourself so the person feels like you're sincere. Or if the person's in front of you feels like they don't want to hear about you or that if you tell this story, it might make you look lower in their eyes or something. Well, then you would tell a story about John, or you would tell a story about somebody else. So you got to read the situation and figure out what the person in front of you needs. And then that's what you give them. Most people don't have that kind of behavioral flexibility. They have their tricks, their personality, and how they do it. And they just keep showing up that way.
Wow. That's brilliant. That's brilliant. We're almost coming to the end of what I think. We're working you hard, Tim. So we're almost coming to the end of it. But what I'd like to do in a month or so's time, if you would agree, for you to take us through a trance for the people that would like it, or a guided meditation, as you call it, to give us a couple of stories. But I'd also like you to talk us through, or me in particular, how we can use this in negotiations and in sales. Okay, so I think I know, but I don't think I know from a master like you. If that's in agreement, that would be fantastic. I'm going to go to the chat box. Thanks, Tim. I'm going to go to the chat box now because we've got some questions. One or two people have had to leave early, and they said what a great session. They're going to watch the recording on YouTube. And can hypnosis deal with alcoholism? Can't even say it. I'm so hypnotized by you.
Yes. Unfortunately, I have a lot of alcoholism in my family. And so I grew up watching how destructive it can be, and what can happen with uncles of mine and cousins of mine. And so it can definitely help with that. And there's two reasons why. So first, we look at the emotional side of it. So for the emotional side of it, we turn to drugs and alcohol, sometimes socially, but often because we're trying to squelch our pain. We're trying to lower our anxiety. We're trying to quiet our worrisome mind. And so we keep going to things outside of us because we think it makes us feel better, or it gives us liquid courage. You know, it allows us to be who we think we really are. And so so that's why people would go to it emotionally. And what we want to do is create a new identity for ourselves. Instead of, I'm an alcoholic and I'm always going to be powerless. Well, no, you got to take the approach that you are powerful, and that you can control your actions and what you do by upgrading your beliefs, not trying to use positive thinking, but upgrading your core beliefs about who you really are. When you do that, it's incredible what you can accomplish. So yes, you are powerless if the alcohol is already inside of you, but until it's there, you have a lot of power. So we want to help people feel empowered. Physiologically, alcohol messes with your brain. And so when people are getting out off of alcohol or hard drugs, they have pretty horrible withdrawal. And so what happens is the withdrawal is so painful that eventually they go back to the drinking because your brain wants out of the pain, right? And so people get trapped. I'm in pain if I'm drinking, and I'm in pain if I'm not drinking. Well, I'm going to go back to drinking because it's what I know. And so if you can teach people how to use hypnosis and experience that dopamine release and that deep state of relaxation without the alcohol, that's what they'll go to. Plus, when you're going through withdrawal, you can't be tight and relaxed at the same time. So hypnosis lowers and gets rid of about 80% of withdrawal symptoms in most people. So, which is pretty significant, because doctors will try to give you another drug to do that, which then creates another side effect. And so we've got to learn how to use the power that we already have inside of us instead of constantly going to drugs. So yes, there is a powerful combination of using hypnosis to help people to be free from alcoholism.
And presumably the same happens with smoking and any of those phobias on things like that. Well, mm-hmm. Maybe you'll walk us through that. If somebody would want to volunteer for the next session to have a, what would you call it? A phobia release in front of people on Zoom, which is what people do. That would be probably $5,000 worth of therapy from you, Tim, that I've just negotiated for them. But
yes, that would be great. If somebody is seeking a transformation and I can show you some of the tools that I use and how fast it works and how long lasting it is. Because we always have to monitor our mind. Our brain is kind of like it has a steering wheel, and you have to keep driving that, your thoughts, your whole life. But when you upgrade a belief, it's upgraded. You know, it's you've created a shift that's sustainable. And so I'd be happy to do a demonstration.
That's very kind of you. I really do. So if anyone watching this on YouTube or today wanted to contact you for a bit of help with something, Tim, how would they do that?
Email. If you go to tim@timshure.com, you know, that's an easy way of doing it. I have two different websites. So timshure.com and I can put the link in the chat box. But timshure.com will take you to my corporate speaking site, but you can get away. You can connect with me that way. Indie Hypnosis, INDY hypnosis.com is my hypnosis practice. And so you could schedule a consultation that way, a free consultation, or just send me an email, tim@timshure.com, and we can take it from there.
Okay, that's fantastic. I'm just looking in the chat box for any other questions. I think I've covered most of the power questions in there, Tim, but I'm just going to close now. Thank you for joining us. I'm going to turn the recording off, and perhaps you would stay for any questions, short, sharp questions that any of the my guests today have got. So Tim,
could I mention that Legend Summit real quick too, just since you'll have the recording of this?
Of course you can.
Thank you. So if you're interested in personal development, I have a Legend Summit that I put together with some of the world's best business minds and personal development icons of our time. People like Brian Tracy, Les Brown, Bob Proctor, Dennis Waitley, Patricia Fripp. I would have invited Derek, but I didn't know him yet. or Tim. And so,
Tim, we're already booked up for that day. So, you know.
Yeah, so I have 14 of the most iconic people in the world that are going to help provide some incredible advice for how to be successful as we move through COVID and navigate the new world. So if you go to legendsummit.com, you can check it out.
Great, and that's in the chat box for anybody that's watching. It's in it's under timshure.com, indiehypnosis.com, and legendsummit. Wow, Tim, there was so much information there to assimilate. That was absolutely fantastic. And we're honored and privileged that you could join us all the way from Indianapolis and agree to join us again. So thank you so much, Tim, for joining us. And the usual round of applause, please, for Tim. Thank you so much.